Hey there, it's Kaysunga, and I have a really cool announcement for y'all. Headspace is now offering mental health coaching in the Headspace app. You can connect with a trained expert for live, text-based one-on-one support on your time from anywhere. Whether they're helping you cope with daily stress and anxiety or supporting you through big life events like loss or relationship hurdles, your coach will draw from clinically validated tools to help you reach any mental health goals. You can text a mental health coach for just $99.99 a month. Just sign up on the Headspace app or at headspace.com/coaching.
There were two journeys for me, right? It was going through the experience and how did I make right decisions along the way to then end up with this great love and great family and a happy life. And it all started with forgiveness. I was actually thinking about this morning. I woke up thinking about talking to you and I thought, you know, What was it outside of the fact that my mother was involved in the church and that pulled me in?
When Michelle LeClaire was just 17, her family moved from Oklahoma to Los Angeles. Michelle was nervous about fitting in. Her family didn't have money, and she didn't know what her future would look like.
I want to be important. I want to be popular. I want people to like me, and I want to fit in. But there's something inside that doesn't quite fit in. Not understanding why I was not attracted to boys like all my best friends were. And I just couldn't figure it out and thought, oh, I was a gymnast for so many years, so maybe I was just having hormonal issues, right? And so I thought, okay, well, I'm just, you know, maybe all of that will come to me when I'm 20.
Michelle pushed these thoughts down and focused on staying busy in the moment. She was working, trying to save up money, and around the same time, Michelle's mother started working for a consulting company. Her mom didn't realize it at the time, but...
that consulting company happened to be one of the largest fronts to the Church of Scientology. And what they would do is these doctors, which were chiropractors and dentists, would come in for business and marketing consulting, and then they would start talking to them about their personal lives and their relationships, and they would refer them over to the church to do non-secular courses on communication and marriage and marketing. And then, of course, that would then go into promoting what their belief system was. And so my mother looked at this innocently and thought, well, gosh, yeah, I could use some help when it comes to relationships and communication. And, you know, this could be good for me. And by the way, Michelle, why don't you work here at this management consulting company during the summer before you are leaving for college? And I had been accepted at the American University of Paris. So as I was getting ready to leave for school, one of the owners of the company pulled me aside and said, we were thinking about promoting you to a sales position, which was going to pay me $60,000 a year, which to me, that at 17 was a lot of money. And so I thought, well, you know what? I guess I can go ahead and put school off for a year.
Out in the world, Michelle wasn't sure where she fit in. But at this new job, she excelled. Her managers complimented her performance, entrusted her with more responsibility, and threw more money her way. For the first time in her life, Michelle felt needed and important.
I ended up trying to race to get into work. And as I was doing that, I got into a horrible car accident and my car went underneath two semi trucks. And luckily, nothing major happened to me. I have no idea how that happened. And so my mother walked into the hospital with a Scientology minister.
Michelle started questioning how and why she survived the car accident. Scientology claimed to have the answers, and Michelle was eager to listen. I'm Catherine Schwarzenegger-Pratt. This is The Gift of Forgiveness, a podcast filled with inspiring stories from those who've overcome the unforgivable. On this show, we're telling people's stories as truthfully as possible. Sometimes you might feel uncomfortable or anxious. If that happens, I encourage you to pause and take some deep breaths. I met Michelle several years ago at a dinner at my mom's house. My mom had met Michelle's wife, Tina, and she invited them both over for dinner. Right when I met Michelle, I knew she was smart and funny, and I quickly learned she had an interesting story to tell. We started chatting about life and makeup. Side note, she is a total makeup guru. As we moved to the dinner table, Michelle's story of meeting Tina and trying to leave the Church of Scientology began to unfold. This was a first for me. In Los Angeles, the Church of Scientology is a big cloud of myths, gossip, rules, celebrity, drama, and cultish behavior. It's also very opaque. From the outside, it's hard to know what's exactly going on in those towering Scientology buildings. Sitting across the table from someone who had been on the inside, managed to successfully get out with her children, leave her husband, and fall in love and marry a woman, I was astounded. I knew this would be a story of strength, resilience, and fighting for love. And boy, it's that and so much more. Michelle joined Scientology when she was just 18 years old. Now, we all know that when we're 18, a lot of us struggle to imagine the big picture. It's a time that a lot of us experiment, ask questions, and make mistakes. We all make decisions that we look back on and cringe. For Michelle, making the decision to walk into the Church of Scientology was a choice that would leave her fighting her way to freedom.
I always say the best way to explain Scientology is it's Tony Robbins meets a little bit of Buddhism and a little bit of Star Wars all mixed together. One of the things that you learn in Scientology is that any accident or illness is created by a suppressive person that you are in connection with. Okay, so I'm stating this stuff. I have to tell you, I don't believe any of this BS, okay? So at the time I did, so I feel funny even repeating it, but that is what the belief is. So when you're laying there in a hospital bed and you just went underneath two semi-trucks and you're all of 18 years old at this point, and you could pretty much say to any 18-year-old, is there somebody in your life that you feel is holding you back? Right? I mean, everyone is going to say, oh yeah, the friend that I'm arguing with, oh, my mother, my father. Well, all of that sounds wonderful and great, but the problem is the first people you start taking out of your life are all the people who care the most for you. It is your parents, if your parents are not in Scientology. Or for me, my grandparents. My grandparents were the greatest loves of my life. But as I was going through Scientology, I was looking at this saying, well, do they try and hold me back from Scientology? Yes. I had a feeling inside that this probably was not right. But they were dangling things in front of me. Oh, it's a group I can belong to. Oh, I can make a lot of money. Oh, I can be important. Oh, it's somebody I can depend on. And security. I was scared to death to leave and go to Paris. Go to another country that I did not know. I didn't have any money. I didn't have anybody helping me figure it out. And when you really boil it down, I was just scared.
So if we go back to you having a being in a car accident, you're 18 years old, you join the Church of Scientology. When did these auditing sessions happen? When did they start?
So when you first get into Scientology, the very first thing they have you do is it's called an e-meter. Oh my God, this stuff's so embarrassing to talk about now. But okay, so so it's like this lie detector. So literally, it is a machine that has these kind of wires attached to cans, and you hold the cans in your hand, and they supposedly register thought. So in the very beginning, it is to find out what are the areas that are bothering you most. Mm-hmm. And then
your
you go
spots.
In and you start. That's right. So then they've got your weak spots. Here's the problem. Some of what they may be saying, because L. Ron Hubbard pretty much ripped off so much of Buddhism, that Buddhism does believe that there are painful experiences that are holding you back in life. So it doesn't mean that there are not things in your life. The problem is that what Scientology does is they make you believe that that's what you're going in to look for. And when you go in to look for those things and you remember whatever, right? You remember the time you fell off your bike and you hit your head. The next question that Scientology is going to ask you is, well, what did you do to cause that accident? And so I'll take it a step further. If a rape victim goes in to get auditing and talks about being raped, after that rape victim has talked about this, the first question that you are going to be asked is, what did you do to cause the rape? What did you do to cause your spouse to hit you? And even children that are molested are asked those questions. And in the beginning, they ask you very simple questions. And then you start internalizing that all the pain, all the bad things that have happened to you in your life, you have pulled them in, you have created them. And that Scientology is the only group that can help you take responsibility for that and become free. And that's the trap. That is what happened with me, is that, you know, the first few sessions of auditing, what came out for me is questioning my own sexuality and not understanding why I was not attracted to men and why I was having thoughts of attraction to women. And instead of exploring the fact that I was gay, instead it took it further, which was, well, what could I have done to a man in another lifetime that I didn't like them now? And I couldn't explain it. So then you go into address those weak spots. They tear you down in session. What did you do to that person? How did you pull this in? But then they end session with bringing you up. Okay, well, how can you be responsible for that now?
Scientology convinced Michelle that if she just tried harder, she could, in fact, be attracted to men.
They don't give you any opinion that being gay is bad at the time that you're in session. What they do say is, we're now going to send you to the ethics department, right? They have an ethics department, and you're going to read what L. Ron Hubbard says about homosexuality. You kind of skip to the ethics department. You're like, okay, you know, you're feeling good. You just revealed your biggest, darkest secret. And you're like, great, okay, I'm going to read about this. They tell you that you need to read this passage, and you open up Dianetics. I'm looking at sexuality, and I see, like, heterosexual, and, you know, I'm, like, going down and down and down and down, and all of a sudden I get down to where it says homosexuality. And then homosexuality is in the same category as bestiality, as molesters, as criminals. And so then you go further on the list of attributes, and it says cannot be trusted, more than likely is a criminal, very sickly. And you start reading all these things across and you think, oh my God, that's not me. That's not who I am. That's not who I want to be known as.
This is what Scientology does best. They see a problem and convince you that they're the only ones who can help you solve it.
Oh my God, I'm a bad person, but Scientology's going to help me. I'm in the right place. I'm going to get help. It becomes a gay conversion therapy, and you start feeling that you are bad and horrible for having any sort of thoughts of being gay.
Michelle tried to turn it off. It was then that she learned to compartmentalize parts of her life in order to survive.
It was almost like I was watching myself from afar. I had to just start separating myself from myself. I don't know if that makes sense, but
yeah,
I just had to.
Like who you truly were.
Yeah, I just had to like push it down. And if I wanted, you know, my mother was living this great life in the church as this executive, and I was finding that I had all these friends and I had this great job at this consulting company, and I was also now getting hired for a huge insurance marketing firm. And, you know, my career was taking off at a young age, and I just found myself playing the part.
Playing the part included starting a relationship with a man she'd met through Scientology, and they got married when Michelle was just 21 years old.
And within the first year of marriage, I tried to divorce, and physical abuse started, sexual abuse started, and he was able to use the church to support him.
When things were going wrong in their marriage, Michelle would turn to her support system in Scientology. They'd tell her to enroll in a marriage course, which she did. They'd tell her to try harder to please her husband, which she would try to. This gaslighting is how she ended up stuck in that marriage for 12 years. Again, compartmentalizing was her survival tactic.
I had to just lose myself. I had to lose who I was and my feelings and go numb, just get through your day, to get through the sex, to get through the life.
One of the things Michelle had going for her was that she'd worked hard to build a successful life insurance firm in Los Angeles. And despite her unhappy marriage, she had also created a beautiful family whom she loved deeply.
I was making a lot of money. My company was extremely successful. My son was the love of my life. And of course, my other children as they came. But, you know, that's where I focused all of my attention and tried to be gone as much as possible and travel as much as possible. And until one day, there was just no more taking it. I knew in my head that I was going to have to write the church one massive check in order to be allowed to get divorced, because money was the only thing that worked inside the church. And so I was really planning my steps. Simultaneously, I was invited to an event, to a large charity event. And I forced him to go because it was something that we had to kind of go as a couple, and it was this big PR thing. And so he's sitting to my right, and to my left is this amazing woman who was gay. And I remember sitting down next to her, and there was not an attraction immediately. There was just this feeling of, oh my God, this person is amazing. And it was the first time I just felt this unbelievable connection. And all the glass that was surrounding me in my fake little Scientology life was shattering, because I was being told that anyone who was gay was bad and a criminal and no one liked them and they weren't successful. And here's the thing in Scientology. If you get to the point where you start to question one thing, it opens it up that you start questioning everything.
We're going to take a quick break. But before we do, this series is produced by Headspace Studios. Headspace has thousands of hours of meditation, mindfulness, movement, and sleep content. The best tool you have is your mind, so take care of it. Learn more at headspace.com.
I was looking at this saying, they promote success and they promote honesty and everything has to be so honest and so successful, but yet they're making you work until 11 o'clock at night on a normal workday when you're 17 years old if you didn't make a sale. Or the only people you will ever see that have money in Scientology are the big actors, right? All the other people in Scientology have given all their money to Scientology, or it was all about health, but yet they all smoked like fiends. If one and one are not equaling two, that's a problem. That night did two things for me. That night opened my eyes, and eventually that woman would become the love of my life. and my saving grace. And it also caused a very difficult situation that night for me, because I was talking to a lesbian all night long. My ex took that out on me that night. And so with that, that started the first day, the next morning started the first day of my freedom. I wrote a $250,000 check to the Church of Scientology as a donation to ensure that I would get divorced. And my divorce process started.
Michelle had to buy her freedom from this abusive marriage, but she was willing to make the financial sacrifice so she could finally be set free. She started spending more time with Tina, the woman she met at the charity event and soon to be the love of her life, all the while slowly distancing herself from her Scientology community.
You know, I didn't walk into the Church of Scientology and go, by the way, I'm leaving. I mean, when all you have ever known and your entire friends and many of your business associates are tied into the same group, you're kind of just slowly not showing up for meetings, not going to events, you know, not being involved, and you're just slowly unraveling because mentally it takes a while for you to unravel.
She kept untangling her life, slowly and surely, while falling in love with Tina.
So a year into this amazing, romantic, beautiful love affair, I have revealed this to my family. My family is extremely supportive. My dad, my sister, my brother, everyone loved her, thought it was great. And so I didn't know that I was being followed wherever I went. I didn't know that, you know, pictures were being taken of me with this woman. And, you know, ultimately, I couldn't have cared. Like, the great part about it was they thought they were going to use this as blackmail against me, is my assumption, right? That all of a sudden I would say, oh my God, okay, please, no, I'll leave her if you reveal this. Well, I could have cared less, right? Like,
right.
I mean, I was finally me. The problem is, what I did not know is I didn't know any of the sinister side of the Church of Scientology. And my mother was working for the church, came to me and said, Michelle, I'm scared for you. I have to let you know that I have been pulled in by the Office of Special Affairs, and there is an internal investigation that is being run by the Church of Scientology on you. And what I didn't know at the time was that the moment that started to criticize at all the Church of Scientology, a plant was put into my company. They ended up uncovering that one of my business partners was stealing money from me. And so that gave them my weak spot. And I did not know that that was happening.
That's when Michelle started to get really worried.
I called Paul Haggis. So Paul Haggis is a really well-known director. He was the director of Crash, Million Dollar Baby. And he was an ex-Scientologist. And so Paul and I were great friends. And I met with him in New York with Tina. And he sat down and he said to me, Michelle, let me tell you exactly what's about to happen to you if you don't get in front of this. He said, you need to get out to the press. And if you don't, you're going to get a letter in the mail that you're being investigated by some large government agency because the Church of Scientology will have made an unofficial complaint against you. And I mean, Tina and I just laughed at him. We were like, Paul, come on. Like, what? Okay, we get it. We've heard the rumors. That's not going to happen. I mean, please. And 2 months from the time he said that to me, I received my first letter from the California Department of Corporations that an investigation was being opened on me and my company.
The state of California charged Michelle and her business partner with running a Ponzi scheme, resulting in a legal battle that raged many years. Ultimately, all criminal charges were dropped, but she had to pay several million dollars in legal fees and still more to her clients who had lost money.
Most people hear all of these stories about that you're saying and just about the Church of Scientology in general, and you hear, you know, all this torment, this psychological abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse, and the crazy amount of things that happened after you chose to leave the church. What was the forgiveness process like there in order for you to move on? What was that forgiveness journey like for you?
You know, that's a always such a great question, Catherine, because I think it takes people much deeper. You know, I remember when you first asked me that question, when you were first writing your book, and I have to say, I'm much further on the journey than I was even when you first asked it to me, right? Because it's been, you know, a couple years now. The easiest thing to say is that time heals, period.
Right?
Time heals. But for me, I had to dig really, really deep because I was so messed up. And so I felt like I had to dig deep within myself to figure out, where did my path go wrong to start with? And so I remember one day in particular, everything I had built, everything I had known was gone. And I was sitting on the floor and I was lighting a candle and I was praying. And I was so used to tearing myself down in Scientology. And so at first, that was the process I was going through. I was tearing myself down for being gay. Maybe this was all happening to me because I was gay. I was tearing myself down for ever trusting this business person who I felt like I had made a bad decision to trust him. And it not only hurt my business, but it hurt so many other people. And, you know, maybe I was a bad mom. And I was going through all of these things in my head. And I had this overwhelming feeling to just bow. And I literally like got myself as low as I could on my knees and my chest on the ground and my arms all the way out. And I was crying on the floor. And I was just saying, please forgive me. And I had this overwhelming feeling of, Michelle, there is no me forgiving you. You are loved. It is you who needs to forgive you. And everything changed for me at that moment. Everything changed. Everything was going to be okay. And literally, that is the day that I got a call that everything was being dismissed.
And now Michelle could start to rebuild her life.
It was, okay, I have to find myself again. I have to take responsibility for anybody I hurt along the way. And for me, I had to go back to where I took the wrong turn in the beginning. There's a lot of 17-year-olds in the world who do not have family support and do not have money and are fearful, but they decided to take the right way. And you didn't. So what happened to you? Where were you at? What was going on with you at that time? And what was more important? And that 17-year-old self made a decision that ego and money and having somebody support me and not being scared to jump on an airplane and go to Paris was more important than going down the path of going somewhere by myself and getting a college education. And I probably would have figured out my sexuality in college really quick. That was the moment that I just said, forgiveness starts here. You know, you were naive. You were in whatever weak moment that you were in. And that's the choice that you made. And you know what? You get to start anew right now. Most people don't get this opportunity or chance. I feel like what happens when you go back to that kind of first moment and you forgive, it's like this amazing effect. You start forgiving everything along the way. I have truly found my recipe to happiness, and it started back at that moment.
self-forgiveness obviously is most, as most people talk about it, is the most challenging form of forgiveness. But you have moments where you, you know, get triggered by certain things, or you get upset, and allowing yourself to feel those feelings, and then have a practice, whether it's going on a walk, doing a check-in with yourself, whatever that is, to make sure that you can continue living in a life of self-forgiveness.
Right, because don't we all get reminded of our mistakes? Like, our family reminds us of our mistakes, or, you know, for me, sadly, the internet. I mean, like right now, I mean, you know, if you Google me, they have my, oh my, even though I was blessed to get the cover of People magazine and tons of press on my book, the number one site that comes up is a fake site calling me a Ponzi schemer. And it's the church's site. It says powered by the Church of Scientology. All of a sudden, I'll be in the middle of a business deal or something that we're doing, and there's the one person who's like, well, what about this article here? And I have to like take a deep breath and say, all Google is ego. Chill out. Your story is out there. The correct information is out there. Answer his question. And if that doesn't satisfy, move on, right? Like, move on. It has taken me a long journey, Catherine. But, you know, I'm okay now. Like, the Church of Scientology is going to keep doing what the Church of Scientology is going to do. One of these days, there will be enough of us that get together with all of our stories, and they will no longer exist. I truly believe it. There's all of maybe 20,000 patrons today from what I hear, you know, and that's not long lasting. And it really doesn't matter how much money they have or how many stars are out there promoting it. Nobody cares anymore. No one cared because nobody believes them. And so it doesn't hurt me anymore. It's like arrows that go straight through. Sure, there's moments where I know that we're being followed. If I'm doing some big press event, well, okay, great. Come follow me and see how much, you know, I'm in love, and watch me kiss my beautiful spouse, and, you know, watch me with my children and my friends.
Michelle's forgiven and let go, but she still wants change, real change.
I think it would be very wonderful to get some legislative change that says, if you are a religious entity and you use 501c3 money to defame, follow, go after, create a website, tie your name to a website or a link, any dollar that is spent trying to keep somebody in a religion that they have the right to leave, your 501c3 status should be void. If you go after somebody and you spend tax-free money following somebody or defaming that person because that person wants to leave a religion, you are infringing on that person's constitutional rights of freedom of religion.
Would you say that there is anything, any part of your journey getting away from Scientology and your past that you reflect on in a painful light at all? Or would you say that you've kind of made peace with all of that?
I think the only part of pain is that I've hurt anyone else. When you move on with your life, it doesn't mean that you also get to move on from responsibilities. And I think that is something that is very near and dear to my heart. So I let the pain go and I don't tap into the pain, but I never forget the responsibility. You know, look, my book was dedicated to any of the clients of mine that were harmed by a bad business partner. Until those people are at a place where I feel like they are whole, I will never walk away from commitments that I have made, ever. But what I have stopped doing is beating myself up for it. And that has taken me a very long, long time to get there. I have stopped beating myself up and saying, oh my God, what kind of father did I give my children? Well, you know what? That is their father. And I have to do everything I can to give those children the strength and the power to have their voice and to not be victims and to keep them safe and protected. But I can't keep beating myself up for the fact that that is their parent.
Forgiving herself and her past has allowed Michelle the freedom she deserves. When I first interviewed Michelle, I approached it thinking we'd focus on how she forgave the Church of Scientology for all the pain they'd caused her. I was surprised that her forgiveness journey was mostly directed toward herself, taking responsibility for the choices she made along the way, and getting to a place where she could end the cycle of beating herself up for the choices she made at such a young age.
If I could get to even one person so that they did not walk in the doors of that cult, then then everything I went through was worth it. I felt like I had cemented my life. Once I got down it further, I felt like, oh my God, I don't want to be like my mom. I don't want to change my relationships. I don't want to take back my allegiance once given, very much a Scientology thing. I want to be a dedicated member. And if there's something that I don't like about it, well, that's just my own problem. And I think we have to say to our children now, or to 20-year-olds, or 30-year-olds, or 40-year-olds, if there is something, or 50, 60, 70, if there is something in your gut, if you are sitting in a relationship that is not right, change it. If you are sitting in a job that is not right, change it. It doesn't mean, or a religion that is not right, change it. It doesn't mean that it's easy. And it doesn't mean that you don't have to take a lot of very smart and intricate steps to make that change, and that you got to clean up a lot of can we cuss in here? I don't know. A lot of stuff along the way.
Yeah.
But we all change and we all adapt, and failure is okay. I wouldn't be where I am at today with a beautiful life, the love of my life, gorgeous, smart, happy children, living in an amazing world with supportive and loving friends like you and your mom and many of our friends who have supported me all the way through this. I wouldn't be here today if I hadn't fallen first. The moral of my story is, it's okay to fall, it's okay to change, it is okay to make mistakes. Stop beating yourself up, forgive yourself, but damn it, don't make the same mistake again.
Thanks for tuning into this episode, and thank you to Michelle for sharing your forgiveness journey. If you want to learn more about Michelle's story, you can find it in my new book, The Gift of Forgiveness, and Michelle's recent memoir, Perfectly Clear. The Headspace app has thousands of hours of mindfulness content for you, including meditations on forgiveness, grief, noting, and more. Download it today and try it for free. The Gift of Forgiveness is hosted and executive produced by me, Catherine Schwarzenegger Pratt. You can find my book, The Gift of Forgiveness, and Michelle LeClaire's memoir, Perfectly Clear, wherever books are sold. This show is produced by Monique Laborde. Sound design by Dan Kroll. From Headspace Studios, the executive producers are Leah Sutherland, Morgan Selzer, and Sam Rogaway.